The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now though, from dancing at the crossroads to river dance, traditional Irish dancing has always enjoyed worldwide acclaim and popularity. Thousands of people dance competitively in Ireland and beyond every week. And at the very top end of the spectrum, competitors need to train like elite athletes. Well, I'm delighted now to be joined by one of Ireland's biggest talents in the field, Niall Hawley. Niall, you're very welcome.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
So you train dancers.
Absolutely, yeah. I train dancers to be the best that they can be to compete at the World Championships.
Mm-hmm. But your own background, maybe we'll just go back and talk about how you came to that position and that point.
So like many young kids in Ireland, you know, I started dancing when I was about the age of four. I had two older sisters who danced. So I think my mum and stuff thought it was easier just to put me into Irish dancing when she was dropping them. You know
together.
What I mean? It makes it easier. It gives 2 hours down for shopping. You know what I mean? But I took to it like a duck to water and loved it and progressed quickly. And that's where it all started.
And how many world championships did you win?
I won one world championship. It was the 25th anniversary. It was very, very exciting. Kind of gave me the taste of everything that I wanted to get. And
was that always the aim to do that?
I think so, because certainly at that stage, that was pre-Riverdance, pre-Lord of the Dance. So there was no show or professional aspect really to furthering your career in Irish dancing. So competitively, that was like the holy grail, you know, to win the world championships. And I was lucky enough to win every major championship going in the competitive circuit. So it was really, really a great time.
But then from there, you did go into the professional end, didn't you?
Yeah. So at 16, I kind of did everything that I could do competitively, to say. And I went into Lord of the Dance, very young, but it was an incredible experience. And from there, I kind of took my first steps into the professional field.
And how many years did you do that for?
Probably on and off for maybe 13, 14 years. Uh-huh. So it was a long, long time. Not continuously, because obviously I had to go back and forth with education purposes and stuff. But it was an incredible time, an incredible experience.
Then you had an injury, which sort of drew a line under it all,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. One night I was doing the lead part of Lord of the Dance, and I heard a snap on one of my first solo runarounds. And I didn't know at the time, but I actually had snapped my hamstring. So, you know, with the adrenaline of everything in the show and different things that are going on, you continue. And I got as far as the first half and the interval. And the physio on tour at the time was like, Niall, you got to stop. You know, the back of your leg is actually turning black because it was internal bleeding. And that pretty much put the brakes on my professional career.
Right, that drew a line under it. I mean, that sounds incredibly painful. Mm. So once the adrenaline left your body, is that what it felt like too?
Absolutely. Yeah, literally, you know, my leg was snapped in half.
Oof.
Yeah.
So can you dance now? Do you dance when you're training?
Absolutely. I mean, I still have to dance, you know, like in the studio, and I still have to demonstrate and show different things. But I wouldn't be able to continuously dance, say, night after night after night.
Yeah.
If you were to do it like in a show kind of sense. But certainly I have enough still in me that I can train dancers.
Okay. So you were involved in this three-part documentary that Sky put together. I think it was released in November, just gone. So it's available for people to watch now, The Battle of the Irish Dancers.
Correct.
And I saw it recently and I was just struck by what you said, that you said we're in the post sort of river dance era of Irish dancing. What did you mean by that? What era are we in?
Yeah, I feel like river dance was basically, you know, the explosion of it onto the world stage. So that kind of opened up Irish dancing to everybody across the world. I mean, anywhere that the Irish ever went in the world, there was always going to be Irish dancing, but it opened to different cultures. People who have no prior contact with Irish culture, river dance did that for them. So now, you know, we're 30 years on. So we're kind of waiting for a little bit more of a renaissance again, like to kind of bring Irish dancing to the forefront again. And I believe now with the advent of kind of social media and people being able to post videos and post what they're doing in real time, that's opened it up again for the next generation. Because we have to remember, we're onto a different generation now than the prior generation who saw Riverdance the first time around.
Yeah, but you know, the legacy of that is people like the Gardner brothers or Owen Lubbers, who you coached and trained. They are incredible artists.
Yes.
And, you know, social media allows us to see that in a way that we wouldn't have been able to see it back in the Riverdance days.
Absolutely, yeah. Even when I started teaching, you know, maybe 13 years ago, I was very much an advocate for posting videos and posting your work and getting your work out there to the wider audience, because it's great, you know, dancing at the competitive scene and dancing at the hall and, you know, dancing on stage. But there's only a very finite audience that gets to see that. Mm-hmm. But with social media now, you get across the world, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about a renaissance, there are still thousands of people competing every week in, you know, all sorts of organisations in at Fechner up and down the country. It's all happening. It's just whether people outside of that group are aware that that world is there.
Absolutely. And sometimes, you know, when you're in the world, when you're in the bubble, as we call it, we find it hard to believe that people don't understand what we do. But for many people, you know, it is like landing on Mars when you turn up at one of these competitions, because, you know, you see kids in wigs and makeup and tan and stuff like that. Mm. And once that initial kind of like shock kind of wears off, then you look at the dancing and you're like, wow, this is an incredible world. And you'd be surprised at how quickly you become absorbed into it.
How do you feel about the wigs and the tans and the sequins?
I mean, it's all costume. You know what I mean? You have to remember it is costume. You're not wearing it to do your grocery shopping every week. You know, this is something for stage. It's a form of identity. It's a form of expression. And it's evolved as everything's evolved. You know, one person's puts one stone on a dress, then the next person has put 10 stones on the dress. But it is what it is. It's a sign of the times. It goes through waves.
But you can't go out and dance, can you, with your hair in a ponytail in a plain dress? Or can you?
Of course you can. That's the problem that people don't realise.
Yeah, people think they're being marked on their appearance.
No, absolutely not. People don't realise that nobody's holding, you know, a gun to your head that you must wear a 3,000 pound dress or, you know, have the biggest wig going or wear makeup and stuff like that. You have that choice. Mm-hmm. Nobody, it's not written anywhere that you can't wear what you want to wear. It's just that people obviously feel the need to conform. Now, people, it's like anything in life, you know, you could wear something from Penny's or something from Prada. People can pull off anything from Penny's and make it look $1 million if they wish to do so. And I think people need to realise there is that choice there.
Yeah, okay. So, but it is driven by, as you say, it's almost self-perpetuated. You
absolutely,
know?
Yeah.
So when I say that at the upper ends of this, so we're still talking people who are competing on an amateur level in feshes. If they want to be the best, they do need to train like an elite athlete.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're looking to be the 1%, and let's face it, if you're dancing at, you know, the top level world championships, it is the 1% of the dancing community. You need to cross train. You need to train as if you're training for the Olympics. And I think the whole thing about Irish dancing is that's so unique to it. It's an art form, but you train like an athlete. So as much as like people call it a sport and stuff, it's not really a sport. And it irks me a little bit that people call it a sport because it is performing art. But the physicality of it means you have to perform or you have to train like an athlete. And that could mean cross training. It could mean personal trainers, or it could be just, you know, getting into the studio more hours and just doing more work.
Well, how often do you want to see somebody in the studio if they have their eyes on the world championships?
I mean, if you really are serious about doing it, you should be putting in at least 2 hours a day.
2 hours a day?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the body has to be conditioned and you have a lot of muscle memory that needs to keep with technique. And there's also stamina and there's a huge pressure put on the body. So if you take the foot off the gas for any amount of time, you can feel yourself lapsing a little bit back. And I know it sounds a lot, but, you know, like anything in life, if you want to be the best, you got to train like
that. But for an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old, are you saying they should be doing that level of practice?
No, I mean, if you're coming in at 8, 9, 10 and you're just basically learning your craft or getting there, there's obviously like a margin of what's acceptable or what you think should be doing. But you will have some kids that come in at 6 or 7 and you're like, wow, these are going to be little stars. And they fast forward so quickly through the ranks. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you can find by the time they're reaching the World Championships, which is the age of 11, that they are training 2 hours a day. And I know it sounds a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, you could look at television, no problem, for 2 hours a day.
Yeah, so you could be doing worse things.
You've got to put it in perspective here.
So is strength playing a big role in it then?
Absolutely. You've got to condition your body. I mean, your body is your instrument. So
but was it always like that? Or can you remember when you were coming up, were people talking about strength and resistance training?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's all relative. When I was dancing, we thought what we were doing was phenomenal. Do you know what I mean? We thought it was the best that you could be. Nobody's going to get any better. But now when you fast forward 30 years, like what they're doing now is mind-boggling to what we were doing 30 years ago. But again, it's all relative, you know? So we were cross-training even when I was dancing, but not to the extent that they're doing now. It's just as it's progressed, movements have got faster. People are triple turning now where they were singly turning. Rhythms are faster. So everything needs to just step up.
Mm-hmm. So you're a teacher. Are you a judge as well?
I'm also a judge, yeah.
Oh,
so that's actually one of the most enjoyable parts of what I do. I get to travel the world. I get to see so many different incredible dancers. And it's lovely just to touch base and see what everybody else is producing at the same time. You know, what different teachers are working on and different styles that are coming through.
Mm-hmm. So you get to see the different, what the other teachers are teaching their students. Yeah. I'm sure that's interesting because no one teacher is going to be teaching in the same way.
No.
One dance will look different, won't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We're all given the same, you know, time signature and tempo to dance to.
Yeah.
But each school and each teacher will choreograph to how they feel best suits the music and best displays what they want to do.
So what are you looking for then as a judge?
Well, I mean, there's a basic criteria of rhythm, timing, turnout, execution, foot placement, deportment, carriage. And also then you're looking for, you know, the determining factor could be the X factor of what makes this kid stand out a little bit more than the others. And it's charisma.
Really?
Absolutely. I mean, you're on a stage and you're dancing for an audience at the end of the day. So all that technique has to be there in the pot and then you have to bring it forward.
So there's an X factor quantity here.
100%. I mean, this is performing art. You know what I mean? Like, why is one person shining a little bit more on stage, even though they could be technically very, very similar? Some people have it, some people don't. And it's a very difficult thing to actually teach.
What is it, do you say, that Irish dancing brings to a child's life outside of learning what step comes after the last one?
Well, you have to remember, these kids are voluntarily going on stage to be judged, which is a huge thing. There's not many adults that would actually go on stage in front of a panel of adjudicators and an audience of a couple of hundred people and be willing to dance in front of them. So confidence is one thing that it builds completely. It also kind of teaches you, you know, it is subjective. And we are there with a panel of adjudicators. So sometimes the results aren't going to go the way you hoped. So it teaches you that life, you know, sometimes isn't always fair. Mm-hmm. So it teaches you how to be resilient and how to deal with that kind of setback.
I mean, Irish dancing is ours, even though, I mean, it's obviously a worldwide art form, as you say. Does it get enough support, do you think, at home?
No, I don't think so, because I feel we're very proud as a nation. We should be very proud of Irish dancing because, I mean, it's touched every place in the world. And even people who have, as I said, who have nothing to do with Irish culture, whatever like that, look at it in awe and they're gobsmacked by this incredible art form. And it's ours. We should be proud. So I really feel like, you know, the government could definitely step up with grants and different things like that and more incentives to allow us to flourish a little bit more.
Mm. Is there anything there at the moment from the state?
Not that I'm aware of. I know, like, say, if we're hosting a World Championships or whatever in Ireland, we find it very, very difficult to get anything from the state. As compared to if you go to America or if we went up north to Belfast, there's huge incentives there by grants. We unfortunately
do not
receive them.
So to help with the staging of a big event.
It's a very, very expensive thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And the VAT rate as well. I mean, that's mm-hmm. often cited as an issue, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think VAT, because I think, you know, say in relation to ballet or something, which is considered a classical art form and a classical education, I think there maybe might be exempt when they reach the VAT threshold. But yeah, there's a lot to look at there. So
okay, so they get a preferential rate is your understanding and Irish dancing does not?
Well, it's my understanding. I don't know the ins and outs, but yeah. that's what I've been told. But there's definitely more that the government could
do. Okay, well, I have, one of my children is involved in Irish dancing and the cost of the classes is actually the lowest.
Of course, yeah.
It's the lowest cost of the whole thing, you know, and really that's the part that they get the most joy from.
Yes.
They're there with their friends and so on. There's a good bit of additional cost around that in terms of the feshes and the dresses and so on.
Yeah.
But they love it.
Yeah. No, I don't think you'll ever, you know, certainly meet an Irish dancing teacher in Ireland who's making €1 million. It is definitely the least costing of mm-hmm. anything is the actual classes. And at the end of the day, that's the most essential thing. So
you do it for the love of it.
Absolutely. It's passion.
Niall, thank you so much. Great to talk to you. Thanks
You're
for
very
coming
welcome.
In.
Thank
that's
you for having me.
Niall Holly. We're going to take a break back after this.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.